So let's go ahead and clear up the confusion. We want to explore some of these anti-nutrients, including what they are, their food sources, their believed functions, and what the science actually reveals about these compounds, and any additional tips for cooking or consuming them. My name is Leigh Farnason. My brother Anders and I are on a mission to help 1 million vegans get into the best shape of their lives. We firmly believe that the more healthy and fit vegans there are in the world, the faster veganism will spread. Let's work together to inspire change, spread compassion, and challenge the status quo. Welcome to the Vegan Gym Podcast. Welcome back to the Vegan Gym Podcast. I'm your host, Leigh Farnason, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Daphne Bascom. And today we're going to be teaching you all about anti-nutrients. So anti-nutrients are naturally occurring compounds found abundantly in plant foods, and confusion about anti-nutrients stems from their complex nature and the mixed messages spread by those promoting products and specific diets that are meant to help you to navigate anti-nutrients. So let's go ahead and jump in. And in this episode, we're going to be covering what anti-nutrients are and why they've gotten such a bad reputation. And then we'll dive into a few specific ones and cover everything that you need to know about them. So what exactly are anti-nutrients? Well, plant foods contain a diverse array of bioactive plant compounds, and many of these compounds are known to have very beneficial effects on human health. No surprise there. However, some of these compounds have been put into a category known as anti-nutrients and have received a lot of attention in recent years. So these anti-nutrients, including lectins, oxalates, phytates, and others, are believed to limit the absorption of essential nutrients or potentially have adverse effects on your health. While this may be partially true, there's a lot more to this story than some of the over-exaggerated headlines are going to acknowledge. So let's jump in and figure out why these have gotten such a bad reputation. There are a few reasons why these anti-nutrients have gotten such a bad reputation over the years. As with many nutrition misconceptions, a lot of the confusion originates from animal studies and poorly conducted research. This has led some individuals to exploit this information by spreading fear about anti-nutrients to promote the sale of supplements or advocate for restrictive eating plans. These people often oversimplify the science and selectively choose data to support their claims. This makes it hard for people to separate facts from marketing tactics and understand the real impact of anti-nutrients on health. There's a New York Times best-selling book called The Plant Paradox by Dr. Stephen Guntry, and the slogan of this book is "The Hidden Dangers in Healthy Foods That Cause Disease and Weight Gain." And in this book, he blames anti-nutrients, especially lectins, for many of the health problems that we face in the modern world. But if you dive deep into the actual sources that he cites in his book, most of them are not reputable or barely scrape the surface of the claims that he makes. Just because someone is a doctor does not mean that they will always be giving sound nutrition advice. You are unique in that aspect, but I'm sure you would agree.
I would agree wholeheartedly.
Do not know that much about nutrition. So if you dive a little bit deeper, you will come to find that he sells expensive supplements on his website to, quote, block lectin absorption and other wild claims. Living in a world where everyone is always looking for the next best diet, the Plant Paradox gained a lot of steam at one point and has sold over 2 million copies. I've also seen dozens of comments on our YouTube channel specifically where people have used the phrase plants are poison, and they will just say, these are carnivore advocates who say you should only be eating meat because plants have these
anti-nutrients,
or they have built-in kind of protective mechanisms to kill whatever is eating them or something like that. So it's kind of crazy that there's so much misconception about whether plants are healthy or not. It's like, what did your parents say growing up? Eat your broccoli,
right?
Eat your plants. So yeah, it's wild that we face so much kind of misinformation. So let's go ahead and clear up the confusion. We want to explore some of these anti-nutrients, including what they are, their food sources, their believed functions, and what the science actually reveals about these compounds, and any additional tips for cooking or consuming them. So let's start with lectins. Lectins are a type of protein found in many plants. They have the ability to bind to carbohydrates and are known for their role in various biological processes, including cell-to-cell communication and defense mechanisms in plants. As for the food sources, raw legumes and whole grains are the most concentrated sources of lectins. The key word here is raw, as most cooking methods will eliminate most of the lectins. And here's their believed anti-nutrient function. Animal and cell studies have found that active lectins can impair the integrity of the intestinal mucosa, which is a soft tissue that lines the inside of the intestines, and activate the immune system. This change can lead to an impairment of nutrient absorption. Not only were these studies conducted on animals or cells, but they also used high doses of isolated legume lectins and raw legume flours. However, eating a high amount of lectins is quite rare, as most people will not be eating raw legumes, myself included. Some of the fear surrounding lectins came from a few studies of food poisoning involving raw or inadequately cooked kidney beans. This makes sense because consuming high amounts of the type of lectins found in kidney beans may cause red blood cells to clump together, which can result in bloating, nausea, vomiting, an upset stomach, and diarrhea. But again, most people will not find themselves in a situation where they're eating raw beans that are very high in lectins. Lectins have also been cited as a major cause of obesity, inflammation, and autoimmune diseases. But these claims are mostly anecdotal and have no real science to back them up. So let's dive into what the science actually says about lectins. It is true that when not prepared properly, lectin-rich foods can lead to food poisoning and gastric discomfort. But when lectin-rich foods are eaten in their whole and cooked form, there's currently no strong evidence from human trials to support the claim that they consistently cause inflammation or nutrient absorption issues in the general population. On the contrary, lectins may actually promote human health in a number of ways. Lectins can act as an antioxidant, which protects cells from damage caused by free radicals. Some research even suggests that plant lectins may possess anti-cancer properties, potentially becoming a component of lectin-based complementary medicine for cancer treatment. Furthermore, legumes and whole grains are excellent sources of essential amino acids, prebiotic fibers, vitamins, minerals, and disease-fighting phytochemicals. The health benefits of these foods far outweigh the potential harm. I would recommend that you be skeptical of any diet that tells you not to eat legumes and whole grains because they are well documented as some of the healthiest foods on the planet. In fact, according to a systemic review and meta-analysis published in 2024, a plant-based diet, especially one that emphasizes healthy plant-based foods like legumes and whole grains, is beneficial for lowering the risk of major chronic diseases like type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and premature death. So here are two tips to keep in mind when it comes to lectins. Tip number one is to reduce lectin content with food prep. In order to ensure that you don't overdo it with lectins, simply avoid eating raw legumes, which is pretty easy to do. Lectins are water-soluble, meaning that exposure to water removes them. Most beans need to be soaked in water before cooking, which will reduce most of the lectin content. The heat applied during cooking effectively deactivates lectins. Therefore, by properly preparing your beans for consumption, you'll deactivate most of the lectins, ensuring that they are safe to eat. Similarly, many high lectin vegetables, such as eggplant and potatoes, need to be cooked before being consumed. For vegetables like tomatoes, which contain relatively low levels of lectins, there's usually no need for concern when eating them raw. Canned beans are cooked and packaged in liquid, so most of the lectins have been inactivated in those as well. Tip number two is to be mindful if you have IBS or other digestive disorders. While most people do not need to be concerned about consuming lectins, it's important to always listen to your body. People with IBS and other digestive disorders can have various triggers. While these triggers are not likely related to the lectin content of the food, it may be worthwhile to discuss potential dietary adjustments with a healthcare professional or registered dietitian. Now let's talk about phytates. Phytic acid is a form of phosphorus storage found in plants. While it contains phosphorus, which is an essential mineral for humans, phytic acid itself is not readily absorbed by the human body. So let's discuss some food sources. Foods such as legumes, whole grains, nuts, and seeds contain the highest concentrations of phytic acid, and here's their believed anti-nutrient function. Phytic acid can grab onto and bind to important minerals like calcium, magnesium, iron, and zinc in your digestive tract. It forms little clumps called phytates or phytate salts, which your body can't absorb very well. This can hinder the absorption of these minerals, potentially leading to deficiencies if consumed excessively over time. So to what extent is this actually true? Here's what the science says. While it is true that phytic acid can inhibit mineral absorption, there's a lot more to the story. Maintaining an appropriate phytate to mineral ratio mitigates the negative effects of phytates on mineral absorption. Phytates should not significantly impair mineral status when part of a diverse and balanced diet, especially when traditional processing methods like soaking, cooking, and sprouting are utilized, which reduce phytate content. The anti-nutrient qualities of phytates can manifest into nutritional deficiencies, but this is much more of an issue in developing countries where there is a lack of access to fresh food and overall mineral intake is low. Phytic acid also possesses many more potentially beneficial effects. A 2016 review highlighted phytic acid's natural antioxidant properties, demonstrating its potential benefits in preventing and treating various health conditions, including cancer. Findings from the Nurses' Health Study 2, spanning 8 years and involving more than 96,000 women, revealed an association between increased phytate consumption and a lowered risk of developing kidney stones. In a 2019 study investigating the link between urinary phytate levels and fracture susceptibility among postmenopausal women, researchers concluded that incorporating phytate-rich foods into one's diet is essential for reducing the risk of fractures. In a 2018 randomized crossover trial, researchers investigated the impact of daily phytate consumption on the production of advanced glycation end products, AGEs, in patients with type 2 diabetes. AGEs contribute to vascular complications and appear to trigger diabetes-related diseases. Over the course of 3 months, patients who consumed a phytate supplement had lower levels of circulating AGEs and hemoglobin A1C compared to those who did not consume the phytate supplement. Ultimately, researchers concluded that phytate supplementation could potentially serve as a therapy to prevent the formation of AGEs and mitigate the development of diabetes-related diseases. While we would love to see more research on this topic, there are clearly some promising findings on the health benefits of phytates. And in the same vein as lectins, phytates are present in foods that we know to be overall beneficial for human health. So why would we actually want to avoid them? So here are three tips to keep in mind when it comes to phytates. Tip number one is to eat a diverse, balanced diet. Aim to eat a diverse, balanced diet full of a variety of different plant-based foods. Remember that an appropriate phytate to mineral ratio mitigates the negative effects of phytates on mineral absorption. Tip number two is to reduce phytate content with food prep. To maximize phosphorus and other mineral availability from foods containing phytates, traditional food preparation methods such as soaking and cooking with heat will reduce phytate levels and enhance mineral absorption. Sprouting seeds and beans can notably reduce phytate content while preserving mineral content as well. Tip number three is to maximize your absorption of iron with vitamin C. Many foods that are high in phytates are also high in iron. Beyond cooking your food to reduce phytate content, certain food combinations can further enhance your mineral absorption. A 1989 clinical trial found that the addition of ascorbic acid, vitamin C, significantly counteracted the inhibition of iron absorption. So to optimize the absorption of iron in your body, incorporate vitamin C-rich foods such as citrus fruits, bell peppers, broccoli, and strawberries into your diet alongside iron-rich foods. Now let's talk about oxalates. Oxalates, also known as oxalic acid, are compounds produced by both plants and mammals. Plants generate these compounds for calcium regulation, plant protection, and detoxification of heavy metals. A few of the most concentrated sources of oxalates include dark leafy greens like spinach, Swiss chard, and beet greens. Rhubarb, nuts, raw legumes, and whole grains also contain oxalates. And here's their believed anti-nutrient function. Oxalates are most feared for how they interact with calcium and lead to the development of kidney stones. So let's briefly go through how that might actually happen. Excessive consumption of oxalates can lead to their absorption through the intestine and colon. Once absorbed, these dietary oxalates enter the bloodstream and are eventually excreted through urine. As they journey through the urinary system, they have the potential to combine with calcium and other minerals. This not only reduces the absorption of these minerals, but can also kickstart the formation of kidney stones, which may gradually increase in size over time. So what does the science actually say? Should we be avoiding high oxalate foods altogether? While oxalate intake may contribute to kidney stone formation, the associations are somewhat weak. There are many risk factors at play in the formation of kidney stones, including dehydration, obesity, sodium intake, animal protein intake, inadequate calcium intake, medication, and smoking. Combined findings from the Nurses' Health Study and the Health Professionals' Follow-Up Study, which spanned nearly 44 years and involved almost 250,000 participants, revealed only a modest association between dietary oxalates and kidney stone formation. Interestingly, the risk of kidney stone formation was highest among men with low calcium intake, less than 755 milligrams per day, but it dropped in men with calcium intake at or above the median. Overall, researchers concluded that dietary oxalates were not considered to be a major risk factor for kidney stone formation. In a 2019 study investigating the relationship between diet and lifestyle and the risk of urolithiasis, the formation of stones anywhere in the urinary tract, researchers identified a few key risk factors. High consumption of pickled foods and animal protein emerged as primary risk factors for stone development. Surprisingly, strong tea and vegetables, despite their higher oxalate content, were found to be protective factors. In a 2020 review, researchers observed that a diet high in meat or animal protein and low in calcium was associated with an increased risk of developing kidney stones. Conversely, diets rich in fruits and vegetables were linked to the lowest risk category of kidney stone formation. In a 2014 observational study involving over 83,000 postmenopausal women, researchers discovered that among women with no history of kidney stones, higher total dietary fiber, increased fruit intake, and greater vegetable consumption were significantly associated with a decreased risk of kidney stone formation. Overall, these findings, coupled with recommendations from the National Institute of Health, underscore the importance of maintaining adequate calcium intake, staying well hydrated, reducing consumption of animal protein, and ensuring a high fiber intake as some of the most effective strategies for preventing kidney stone formation. Low oxalate diets are typically recommended for individuals who have a history of kidney stones, especially if those stones were composed primarily of calcium oxalate. So here are four tips to keep in mind when it comes to oxalates. While there's no need to be overly concerned about oxalate consumption unless you frequently experience kidney stones, it's still important to be mindful of a few things. Tip number one is to avoid excessive oxalate consumption. It's okay to include oxalates in your diet, but avoid excessive consumption, especially from high oxalate sources like spinach. Excessive consumption of anything, including healthy foods like spinach, may not always be advisable. Diversity in your diet is really key. We don't want to be eating spinach multiple times per day every day of the week. You, of course, don't need to cut it out of your diet. Just don't overdo it. So about a year ago, I actually raised Andres to eat a tub of spinach. Yep. We did that for a video. I'm not sure if you saw that.
I did.
But like halfway through, our tongue started experiencing like this intense tingling and burning sensation. And I guess I was just kind of caught up in the race. And I wasn't thinking like, oh, why is that? But yeah.
You just kept eating.
Yeah, that was the oxalate. So I definitely wouldn't recommend eating over a half pound of spinach, certainly not a pound of spinach. And you don't even need that much. So a few cups every day is totally fine. I have a few cups of spinach or kale in my smoothies every day. And that's a great way to add lots of nutrients. And it's not going to harm you in any way with overdoing oxalates. So tip number two is to reduce oxalate content with food prep. Similarly to lectins, oxalates are water soluble. So wet cooking methods such as boiling and steaming can drastically reduce oxalate content. Soaking, canning, or cooking beans also reduces oxalate content, which, as we've mentioned before, is necessary in order to eat them anyway. Tip number three is to ensure adequate calcium intake. Ensure adequate calcium intake by incorporating calcium-rich plant foods like tofu, organic soy products, calcium-fortified plant-based milks, chia seeds, kale, and broccoli into your diet. Tip number four is to reduce oxalate consumption if you have a history of stones. For individuals prone to kidney stone development, consider reducing consumption of oxalate-rich foods, maintaining adequate calcium intake, and staying hydrated. So you mentioned before we started recording that you have a history of kidney stones. Can you share what your diet looked like and how you think that happened?
At the time I hit my initial experience, I was still eating, and I was still an omnivore. So I was eating mainly animal protein, some vegetables, because I was competing. And I was not supplementing with calcium. So my hypothesis is that the high animal protein load that I was consuming, along with not much variability in terms of other nutrients I was taking in, may have contributed to having that acute onset of kidney stones, which is painful, by the way.
Yeah, and I told you my mom has also experienced that as well. I've never experienced it, thankfully, but she was also on a omnivorous diet, and since she's been vegan, she hasn't had
Same
any
here.
Issues.
No.
So,
and I don't eat half a pound of spinach, but yeah. Even though all this literature saying don't eat oxalates or reduce oxalates, I have not had an issue since being vegan.
Great. So in conclusion, the biggest red flag surrounding the anti-nutrient issue is the fact that these anti-nutrients are found in foods that we know to be beneficial for human health, like vegetables, legumes, nuts, and whole grains. Although there are some cases where you may need to be a little bit more mindful of your intake of certain quote-unquote anti-nutrients, for most people, it really is not a concern. Instead, focus on consuming a well-rounded plant-based diet that contains a diverse range of plants. So if you came into this episode with some concerns about these anti-nutrients, I hope that the research that we cover in this episode helped to mitigate all of your concerns. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode. To get access to some of our best content for free, head over to thevegangym.com. We've got tons of articles and guides to help you burn stubborn body fat, build lean muscle, and supercharge your health. You can even use our vegan nutrition calculator for free to figure out how much protein, calories, and micronutrients your body needs. Get started right now at thevegangym.com.